Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Rich Fries. He's the president at National Book Network, a major book distributor located in the Washington, D.C. area. Hey, Rich, how are you?
Very well, David. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk to you. We've known each other a long time, and both having worked extensively in book distribution. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
I'd be happy to. I guess you could say I'm a publishing brat. My father worked at Doubleday & Company his entire career, and I basically grew up in New York at the big houses for about the first dozen years of my career. I grew up on the sales side, and ultimately I was the VP of sales at Doubleday, at VP of sales at Wiley, and then left to go run the National Book Network distribution company. I found that I really enjoyed the independent publishers and the creativity and drive that they brought to what they were doing. So for me, it's just I grew up in publishing. I also ran a publishing company in St. Paul, Minnesota called Motor Books International, and that was basically after my first eight-year stint at NBN. I wanted to see what it was like to run a publishing company, and it was an eye-opener, running on cash flows and of my own, and dealing with banks, and it was a great experience. And then ultimately, I moved from there to run Publishers Group West, the major competitor of NBN, and came back to NBN last year. And I just love book distribution and working with independent publishers.
Well, it gives you, a unique perspective. I've always thought that, the distributor is in a very interesting position because you have to know and understand the publisher's business very well, but you also have to know and understand the retailers and wholesalers extremely well. And you sit in this middle position where you have a really great perspective on just how things really work. Sometimes, it's kind of nuts and bolts things that I think often are maybe boring or kind of opaque to people who are outside the book business, but it seems that fundamentally the distributor is in a position that's really critical for both sides of its equation.
Yeah, we sit in the middle of the supply chain and have customers in every direction. And, part of our job is to provide the operations and sales component to independent publishers. But as much, we are consultants, and it is our job to help a publisher really optimize the sales of their books. And if they allow us, we're involved from concept to market, from signing, packaging, pricing, positioning, forecasting, really working hand in glove, and that's exciting.
So at this point, how many, to kind of give it a number, how many clients does National Book Network have?
In our last catalog, we had 90 publishers that actually were publishing books that season. If you went back and took the last three, the number's about 115.
And you are also in a particular, maybe not unique anymore, but in a position where part of your parent company is also a publisher.
Yeah, our parent company, the Rumman Littlefield Publishing Group, is an academic and reference publishing company. About 20% of their books are appropriate for commercial trade distribution, and NBN is really a commercial trade distributor by and large. We have a professional and trade division that represents companies, organizations like the American Bar Association, but I'd say right now about 75% of our bag is commercial trade. We actually also own our own distribution company in Plymouth, England, NBN International. That's both trade and but primarily professional distribution.
And I guess like all of the distributors, you've recognized the emerging ebook marketplace. As I understand it anyway, you've begun now to act as an ebook distributor as well.
Yeah, we launched a diffusion program a couple of years ago, and basically recognizing, I think, what a distributor should be doing is bringing the economies of scale and everything that a publisher does and has to touch. A distributor should be able to bring the combined power of all of those individual publishers to the different functions that they have to bring. So we're not only, you know, yes, we're involved in ebook distribution, but we're also creating ebooks for publishers in every format available. We are doing XML tagging. We're doing very complex conversions. So, you know, and then tied to that, we've got our POD facility and digital short run capacity, and we provide long run printing services. So we're really trying to be involved with the publishers from concept to market. And I think as the world has changed, we used to just be distribution, sales, and marketing. But with the way the world in publishing is evolving, a distributor really has to bring value at sort of every stop in the supply chain if we're really going to be optimizing for the publishers.
So, I mean, actually, that I think that's true. And it seems that, you know, one of the values that a distributor formerly offered, which is now kind of more and probably is obsolete, and that's the idea of increasing your, you know, a publisher's trade sales because the sales force had access to this wide range of customers. And what it turns out now is, you know, there aren't as many customers for the physical books, and the ability of a trade distributor to promise a certain level of sales is probably no longer a value as much as, as you've talked about, the consultative element and the ability to take the book and figure out what's the, where are all the markets for it, what are all the formats for it, and how do you maximize distribution and marketing for the book.
Well, that's really key, David, because it's really where all the, you know, when you said where all the markets are, I started nodding unconsciously because, you know, yes, the independent booksellers, while still an important part of our market, are, you know, for us, I think they're about 10% of our overall sales. And, you know, you've got five key customers who are driving the majority of the business with the major chains and then the wholesalers. But what we found is we had to become truly multi-channel. And so it really, you know, heavy emphasis on gift and gourmet, going to places where traditional distributors never went before and the publishers went individually, you know, independently. And now we have to do all that ourselves. And it's, to me, that's an exciting part of the growth. And, you know, building the capacity to go after the online retailers beyond the big three or four, you know, Apple and Amazon and Sony. I mean, you're really reaching deep. I think we're pushing out to more than, it's about 48 different sites right now that are selling ebooks, and it's growing every day, and that's part of how the sales function is evolving.
So yeah, I want to talk about the difference between electronic distribution and print distribution, because I think I don't know this for sure, but my supposition is that initially everyone in the book business has correctly followed the kind of model of print distribution to create ebook distribution. And, you know, it's a sort of logical thing to do. At an early stage of the business, you have to organize it in some way. But it feels like that's changing a bit. You know, that it's the mechanics of being an ebook distributor are different than the dynamics of being an ebook distributor are different than the dynamics of being a print book distributor. And I'm curious to know if you agree with that idea or how you see what an e-distributor will be over time.
Well, you know, I do agree that it is profoundly changing how we went about, how we look at how we sell product. It used to be we had a set list of accounts. We went out to them. They bought books in advance of publication. And, you know, at PubDate, we had this, you know, big launch. And, you know, and now everything is changing. And it's really, especially on the e-book side, the idea of creating a book, it's actually, to me, it's easier to make a book work in today's market in some ways than it was when, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when we were just selling print books without the Internet. And partly that's because of social networking, and it's because of the ability for communities to come together who are interested in individual subjects and become aware of products that are in the marketplace. And, you know, one of our friends, David, you know, Mike Shatskin, talks about developing verticals. And to that, it's basically you know, trying to develop in a category so that you become a desk. For me, the way I interpret for a distributor is that it is what I'm working to do is to develop a real strength in core categories so that I become a destination stop for people who are interested in a given category, whether it's cooking or travel or gardening, you name it. I used to not want too many travel publishers, let's say, in my bag because I didn't want competition in the bag. Now I'm finding I'm the exact opposite. I'm looking to build extreme strength so that people look at me as the source that they have to talk to get the product they need.
And so here's another, I mean, that's actually an interesting view of it, which I hadn't thought of before, which kind of puts the, you know, the emphasis for the distributor instead of being on a push model, it's really more of a pull model.
You know, we almost have to become strong in working in that area with our publishers.
Right, and that means also understanding the market and who those buyers are, both aggregated and unaggregated.
Yeah.
That's a big challenge because that changes the nature of your business. It means that you have to learn a whole other set of skills that you didn't know before.
That's absolutely true. It's one of those evolve or perish type things. You know, as the electronic marketplace evolves, we have to prove that a distributor belongs, it brings value in the middle of the supply chain if we're going to be here 10 years from today.
Well, and here's, I mean, another challenge that is really different, you know, that you would never have imagined going to different physical stores and saying and having to say to them, oh, I'm going to deliver your book in a different format. You know, where now, I mean, although I guess it is true, you know, you had to ship according to the shipping rules of each customer. There would be some variation in the warehouse. But today, you know, some customers want EPUB and other customers want Mobi and another customer might want a different format. You know, maybe it's going to be HTML5.
Even when they say they want EPUB, it isn't necessarily the same EPUB.
That's right. I remember when EDI came into the book business, it was supposed to be a standardized format for data transaction, electronic data interchange, but each retailer had their own version of, you know, the EDI standard. And the same thing is true in eBooks. EPUB could mean a lot of different things. So, but that means for you as a distributor now, instead of thinking about a warehousing dynamic, you know, and teaching publishers what they need to do to pack and ship books correctly to get them into your warehouse, and for you, or how they label them with barcodes and all of the kind of mechanics of print books, you now have to be involved. You have to understand XML. You have to understand EPUB. You have to understand what emerging standards are coming along that might take over some, you know, somewhere down the road. And there are going to be a multitude more platforms over the next few years. Now, not all of them will survive. We know that. But you've got tablets coming in different formats from Apple, and there will be different business models that might be proposed to you. You know, you even now have sell at a wholesale rate or sell on agency model to Apple, which is a completely different version and requires a different billing system.
It's all true. I don't want to minimize the print side of the business. I think I'm going to happily retire, and most people will tell you I will never retire, with print books still being a vital part of what I do. I really do.
Well, it has to be. I mean, there's even if, I'm a believer that digital is going to make vast change and increase its market share faster than most people had previously thought or think today. But even so, print still has a long life ahead of it.
Yeah, it really, and especially, you know, you have to just take a look at formats and categories. There are certain categories that have run to e-books, like on the technical side of the business and the scientific side, it ran years ago. On the bestseller side, when you talk to people in the big houses, they're big books, they're fiction, they're big, you know, they're big bestsellers, are moving very quickly into bestseller, into a strong share of e-sales. But for most small to mid-sized independent publishers, E-book sales are still a very small. They're not 40%.
Right.
And maybe they're coming up to 10%.
But I, you know, there are a couple of dynamics there I wonder about. For instance, with bestsellers, it would make sense to me that people who are interested in, let's say, the new John Grisham, will be the hit. You know, there'll be people who read a lot of books, and for whom the e-reader is a really practical and handy device. And because they buy a lot of books, if the ebook sells for, let's say, $10 or $11, it's like paperback pricing versus hardcover. And, you know, if you're consuming a lot of books, the e-reading is very, very attractive. Now, the smaller publishers obviously don't play in that game with those dynamics. But another factor, I would imagine, and you can probably confirm whether this is true or not, many of the smaller and medium-sized publishers are challenged by the amount of work that it is required of their limited resources to become as conversant with ebooks. I mean, you know, obviously you can provide that for them, but they still have, at least it appears, been slower to introduce ebooks contemporaneously, simultaneously with their print books. Is that true?
I do think that's true. More publishers are, because they've got the electronic files when they're creating their books today, many of the publishers are moving into ebooks on the front end. The ability to actually go back and convert their backlist is woefully inadequate. I mean, and mostly it's because of cash flow. People just don't have the money to...
Right, and because let's assume it costs $300 or $400 to convert a backlist title. You've got to, you know, they've got to do some work to the file maybe to make it suitable, and then there's a conversion fee to turn it into an EPUB. And if your backlist sells for, you know, $8, $9, $10, once you've paid all your distribution and fees and the retailer's discounts, it takes a while to pay those conversion costs off, not to mention you've got to still pay royalties.
Well, exactly. And quite honestly, you know, independent publishers all too often rush to market before they're ready to actually market the books properly because of cash flow.
Right.
You know, they don't have the time to sit on the manuscripts, and that's a tactical disadvantage that they have in the marketplace.
Well, and let me ask you another question along those lines. It appears to me that when you talk about producing, if you're a publisher today, the cost that has not gone away if you do ebooks and print books simultaneously, there's no reduction in the cost of editorial. You still have to edit. You still have to copy edit. You still have to proofread. You still have to have a cover. And if you're going to produce a book in print and e-form, you still have composition cost. And then some printing cost. And then, of course, if you sell fewer books, your unit cost of printing goes up. And if you print digitally or print on demand, your actual cost of production is higher. And so it seems like a kind of negative dynamic at play for the smaller publishers, because if your unit sales are lower, you can't amortize your editorial costs as readily. The Grisham is going to the editorial cost is amortized day one. It's paid for. But if your book sells 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 copies, which today is fairly normal for a lot of books, editorial is a really big problem.
Well, it is, and it's one of the reasons I am not. It's a somewhat controversial. But I really don't like the idea of paperback pricing books, the equivalent of paperback pricing e-books when they come out. Published in hardcover in the past, it's hurting the perceived value of what we do, and I would much rather see us be a little bit more balanced in our pricing models, and come out with the ebook price paperback when you would have come out with the regular price paperback.
Well, so do you think it's possible, if you're talking about the small to medium publishers, can they really kind of stand against the grain, take a stand against the flow of business that's going on around them, as consumers are really kind of defining the market right now, not publishers? I think really, I kind of see that years ago, I think publishers were able to set prices, they were able to set discounts, and then retailers really became ascendant and retailers determined prices, and retailers determined the discounts that they would buy and determined which books they would buy. So therefore, they really, I don't want to say they control the business, but they certainly had a lot of power. But today, I think that power has moved to the consumer.
I think you're right, but at the end of the day, I really, truly believe that it ends up being, it's all about does somebody want your product? Where independent publishers are extremely competitive, and I represent a lot of specialty publishers who are really good at what they do. And if a consumer wants your Italian cookbook or they want your travel guide, because you have unique features and you have been able to communicate them, you know, in the appropriate way, I truly believe that you're still going to be able to do, instead of $9.99, are they going to say no at $12.99? Probably not. I mean, certainly that's been our experience to date. The majority of our publishers are not pricing at that flat $9.99, and they're succeeding, and I think they're doing well. And you know what? They'll come down in pricing a year later when the paperback would have come out.
No, I think that makes sense. I think dynamic pricing for the different value that maybe because information is new and wanted, you can price it higher. It may be even that publishers can start unbundling some of their content and ultimately receiving a greater amount of money.
And I think that's the key. I'm just struggling to try to help publishers, as you were saying, amortize their development costs. And it's getting harder and harder, and they don't have the cash flow on the front end to wait.
No, that's true. I think that's a big issue. Now, of course, it may have one effect on independent publishers, as I'm pretty certain it is on the larger commercial publishers, and that is to cause some reduction in the title output, which may not be a bad thing, because it's not that I never have really subscribed to the idea that there are too many books. I think a lot of people feel like there are, and I respect that opinion, but I think the concern I have is that publishers often do more books because they feel obligated to or because they're enthusiastic about the books, but then because they do more books than they are capable of marketing well, that they sometimes miss opportunities by publishing too many books.
Yeah, if you don't have the cash flow to do the whole job properly, do a few things well.
Right, and I think you make more money by selling because you sell more books.
Well, other thing I've seen independent publishers do unbelievably throughout the last 30 years is they try to be in too many categories simultaneously before they've established their strength in an individual category.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I look at the media out there that wants to talk about content, that wants to talk about projects, and they look just like any other buyer because they're a buyer in their own way. They want reliable sources of content that they're going to talk to again and again because this is a person I know is going to give me an hour of airtime or 20 column inches or whatever it is. And I've worked at many houses where you could pick up the phone and call someone like a Mark Bittman at the New York Times and he'd take your call, and then the little guys don't get their call taken. And I'm not picking on Mark Bittman. I used him as a random example. But it's really important for them to be able to develop a reputation for quality and consistency in a category.
Right. Well, what you're saying is that publishers actually do need to have a brand.
They do.
And that's a kind of interesting idea because so many times publishers have – there's the common wisdom is that consumers don't recognize brands of publishers. They buy the book for the title, the author, the subject, not because – XYZ publisher did it versus ABC. But I think that the brand has meaning in many other ways. It's not just to the consumer, although ultimately I do think a branded publishing business where you can create a recognizable territory has a tremendous advantage. And that goes to Mike Shatzkin's idea of verticality. What he's really talking about is to really know a particular turf so well that you can become part of its community, and that means you become a valuable brand within that community.
Exactly. You're the go-to, and they know it, and they rely on it.
Right. And within the book business, that's very important that, in fact, bookstores, booksellers, wholesalers do develop a brand profile for a publisher. And they, you know, especially if a publisher markets well, every book they publish has support, has an understanding of the market. They're not just throwing the books out there, or that they don't give, you know, they don't cease to market them too quickly. People do recognize that, you know, and as you say, media recognize the brand value of a publisher over time.
Yeah, and I'll go back to now the place of the distributor in the marketplace. One of the things distributors have always brought to publishers is credibility with key customers. I mean, when we're a top 10 supplier to a Barnes & Noble or a Borders or whoever, and we sign a publisher and say we're going to carry it in our bag, to them it says it means something. This is a publisher that I have to be aware of, I have to take a look at. And so, you know, that's part of, you know, we build our brand with the strength of our publishers' brands, and it's one of the reasons we consult so much on with our publishers about brand identity, because our brand isn't anything unless what they're doing resonates with our key customers.
So do you have, I mean, to that point, as a distributor, do you feel today that you can look at a publisher and say, that's a publisher that fits my profile, and then look at another publisher and say, I don't, you know, even though they may be successful and even though they may be selling a lot of books, I shouldn't carry them because they don't fit the profile of the business that I'm doing.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I talk a lot about with my staff and with my publishers about shared expectations, and we need to know, you know, on the very front end of every conversation, I want to know what people's definition of success is, what their needs are, and that I can meet those expectations with the resources that I have available or with the resources that I could bring in and still make some money. And so, yeah, there are times when we don't take a look at a publisher and say, you know what, we think that the product really has great potential, but we don't think it fits us where we are today and where we're going for tomorrow.
So and looking ahead, you know, since you brought up earlier that you think that, you know, you wanted to, you know, not be distracted completely in a conversation about digital publishing, I think that's totally fair. For print books, how do you see, let's take a short horizon, the next 5 years, you know, today you see, you know, there are a couple of main bricks and mortar book chains, there are the price clubs, a couple of wholesalers, a couple of big, you know, one or two big online players, and a bunch of independent stores, you know, seemingly still in decline. What do you think is going to happen over the next few years? How is this going to play out?
Well, I think that's too broad a question, because it's really going to be different. I would answer almost by categories, because there are certain categories that are going to, I think, you know, move more and more quickly into an e-book world where print becomes less important, and other categories where they're going to be very slow to adopt. I was talking to an art book publisher. I have a high-end art book publisher in my bag doing books that are, you know, the lower-end price points are $90, the higher-end price points are $500. And you know, I think that the people who want to buy those kinds of books are not going to be happy with them in ebook form.
Right.
We may need to change some formats on some of the monographs that are used primarily by students. We may end up wanting to make a far larger trim size than we used to do the art more justice. I mean, one of the dictates that used to determine how we package product was the size of a bookshelf, and in many cases that's becoming less relevant. So I think, you know, there are certain categories. I mean, travel is an interesting challenge right now. I mean, we represent, you know, some of the top travel publishers in the world. Most people, you know, are not using travel books to book airlines or hotels anymore. They're looking for different kinds of information. Our job there is to build a complementary product to the online product.
Right, and maybe customized, maybe print on demand, maybe custom publishing to some extent. And you know, at least in let's say travel and cookery, I think those are the two areas right now which look to be most challenged by the various online and digital publishing formats. Does that mean that for you as a distributor, you might end up creating an app workshop, you know, a kind of app studio where some of your publishers could gain access to tools and templates that would help them build other products than they're able to build now on their own?
It's certainly one of my goals, and you know, one of my clients is a publisher out of California here, just south of San Jose, called Fast Pencil, and they've designed a template that is basically, you know, you put your manuscript in unformatted manuscript on one side, and they have it is massaged into a template, and a book comes out the other side.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they can publish, and then basically, they can do a book in three different formats with a push of a button. They can do all ebook formats at a push of a button.
Now, is this just available for their own books, or are they selling this service to other publishers?
Well, I'm actually partnering with them to start to make that available to my client publisher base.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty valuable.
Yeah, and in fact, this is the coolest part, David. Let's say that 6 months out, you want to do a revised edition. So you revise the edition, you hit update.
And it revises all of them?
Revises all.
Yeah. Is this an XML workflow, or is this something else?
No, I believe it's an XML workflow.
Yeah, I think that's the future for a lot of, and I think, you know, what we've been waiting for, I think, or maybe they've done it actually, is a tool that would automate production for a publisher, because I think that you need to have more automation on the order of what InDesign did or Quark did when they were first introduced. They changed workflows and made them much more efficient and streamlined. And I think, you know, for publishers who are trying to figure out how can I get that base file that I can deploy in multiple formats, I think what you just described would be the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, I really think so. And then, you know, and then there are printers that I work with, like Bookmasters, that are really innovative in bringing, you know, solutions, you know, low-cost solutions to publishers on the production side or on the, you know, ebook side. I mean, there are resources out there that are developing now to really help bring the economies of scale of a larger organization to smaller publishers.
Yeah, I thought about that yesterday. I talked to a publisher who is introducing a new piece of printing equipment that, you know, because I've been thinking for a long time that, you know, publishers are going to be faced with shorter print runs, which means higher prices or higher unit costs. And that at a certain point, you reach a point where you say, I can't publish this book because the cost is too high. But what I'm realizing now is that technology on the print side is going to evolve, and fairly quickly, I think, to drive the prices of shorter runs down, because the printers and the companies that manufacture printing equipment they recognize where the market's going, and they're trying to compete with digital publishing, e-publishing, on the print side. So actually, I think, contrary to what I've thought before, I think actually you're right that, in fact, print costs are going to be driven down by this competition and make print a viable kind of equal alternative to e for quite a while.
Yeah, I really do believe that. And, you know, I think that as the groups that provide services look at the independent publisher base and they look at what they're doing and they look at the services that they can aggregate, that the publisher's going to find that they really have a lot of options to drive down their costs.
Well, I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
In the sort of evolution of publishing, I think one of the things that, you know, now, especially with electronic publishing, a lot of talk is going on about publishers having to learn how to relate to consumers. Whether they sell directly to consumers or not, it's about understanding your market.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've always been disconnected from consumers, you know, and now digital makes it possible for them to be connected to consumers, even if retailers still sell the books. So from your perspective as a distributor, what do you say to a publisher who says, I have no clue how to talk to a real consumer, a real reader of my books? Can you help me?
And well, what I'd say is I think they have a clue on how to talk to them. I think they don't really have a clue on how to find them. And there, I would say, you know, what you need to do is hire some dedicated resources that are just blogging, that are going out and looking for affinity sites and are just dedicated to starting the conversations and to building awareness and building relationships. It's what I was saying before about becoming a valued supplier to the media. Well, the online media qualifies in the same way. There are going to be sites, there are going to be 300 sites out there that care about African blue parrots. And if you're going to do a book on blue parrots, you have to know who those people are, and they have to, and you have to establish a relationship. It's not hard. It's not hard to do. It takes time.
I agree with you. And I think on that note, I want to thank you for a really interesting talk. I think we covered a lot of ground. It was really fun.
I enjoyed it.
I've been talking to Rich Fries. He's the president of National Book Network, a book distributor based in Washington, D.C. This has been Publishing Talks. I'm David Wilk, your host.